Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Silmarillion Stories, where the Lorehounds, your guides to Tolkien's world of Middle-earth. I'm John, and this is our podcast for Of Beleriand and Its Realms, the 16th portion of the Silmarillion. In this episode, we're going to be discussing the geography of Middle-earth in the First Age. If you want to get in on the Tolkien talk, send an email to lotr@thelorehounds.com or visit thelorehounds.com/contact to leave a voicemail. One more note, if you want to support us directly, click the link tree in the show notes, follow it to Supercast or Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free access to our podcast, plus bonus content like Second Breakfast, Elevensies, and Shireside Chats. Well, my guest today is the one and only Nubeta Dubeta. You may know from his prolific work on Twitter, on TikTok. Are you on is it X or Twitter for you?
Either one's fine. You know, I know it's how hard it is when something changes like that to get the name, the original name out of your mind. So, you know, Twitter, we know that it's X now. It ain't anything. My main platform is definitely TikTok.
Yeah.
I'm working on getting back on YouTube. Had a couple of people hack my account, so it's kind of hard to work on that.
But oh, boy, I'm sorry.
And got myself on Instagram.
Well, I appreciate that you're making time to be here. I see your TikToks. And I see how busy you are. I think I first came across you because I was posting some Tolkien TikToks and somebody said, you got to collaborate with Nubeta Dubeta. He knows what's going on. And I said, okay, I got to check this guy out. And I'm glad I did. You're very knowledgeable. You make it really easy to understand topics in bite-sized chunks. And I appreciate what you give to that community.
Thank you so much. That means the world to me. That's what I try to do, man. I try to make it relatable for everybody. And I really appreciate the invitation to be on this podcast. It's really awesome, man. So I'm glad to get in here and talk about Tolkien with you. And I'm just excited, man. Let's go, man.
Very cool. Can you tell me how you began your Tolkien journey? I feel like we all have our different origin stories.
Yeah, my Tolkien journey began with me being bad in school. So
okay.
not bad. I was very smart, always super knowledgeable and super smart. But I was bad in school. I wanted the attention. So I would get detention a lot. Mm. And I would be in detention. And at one point in our school's history, detention was held in the library. And to make the time go by faster, I just began like reading because I always loved reading. And a friend of mine was like, yo, man, you should read The Hobbit. And he showed me the book and it had a picture of Bilbo in the Eyrie with the Lord of the Eagles choir mm-hmm. here. And I was like, yo, I don't even know if it's let me run that back because it's not said that he was in Gwaihir's Eyrie. He was in it with the eagle and it looked really cool. This giant eagle and this little bitty creature. And I was like, yo, this looks cool. And I read it because I always liked fantasy and I fell in absolute love. Now I had even seen the cartoon before the 1987 Rankin and Bass, 1977 Rankin and Bass version of The Hobbit. Before I didn't make the connection at first. And I was like, oh, this is that story. And then reading it, getting the full story, I was obsessed in the writing style of Tolkien, just really grasping it. And it really spoke to me. So after that, I was like, I'm done. Thank you so much. And I thought that was the end. And then he was like, yo, man, you got to read The Lord of the Rings. And he gave me The Lord of the Rings. And I was like, there's more? I read The Lord of the Rings and even more so just fell all over again, even harder, deeper into love with Tolkien's writing style, his lore, his visions of the world, everything, Middle Earth, the characters, everything you could think of and imagine about it. I loved it. And I just began reading it obsessively and, you know, finding more and more of his works to eventually got into the Silmarillion. After some trouble reading that initially, I became like obsessed with it and became an expert on the Silmarillion and and so on and so forth, Unfinished Tales, and just more and more talk that I could absorb. And, you know, I just read it just constantly. And so I just became a super lore person. I don't know how to describe it.
I think you did. You're a super lore person. You're on the Lorehounds podcast. It's a good place to be. It's funny. I reached out to you, and that's a great origin story. And I love that you brought up, you know, it's hard to get into the Silmarillion at first, because you picked a chapter that I thought I was going to have to pay someone $1 million to talk with me, because this is the chapter that people often fall off of the Silmarillion, and they
it's one of my favorite chapters ever. Really? Like, it is so good, of Beleriand in his rooms. I teach the Silmarillion. Currently, I teach it at Signum University. Corey Olson, the Tolkien professor, you know, at his university. So I teach it in August. At the beginning of August, I'll be starting my class. And I can't wait to get to that chapter. And people don't know how important the maps are to the world and the understanding of Tolkien's works. But once I got that, even from The Hobbit, just looking at the map and being like, oh, wow, this is everything connects. The beginning of understanding, truly understanding the world, is the map. Always read along with the map. Pay attention to the maps, and you'll get things much sooner, much clearer, and you'll get a firmer grasp on the writing.
Right, right. Yeah, Tolkien was super into the maps. You know, his son would draw them for him and all that. I've been going through his letters on our Patreon feed, and that's been a lot of fun to see sort of how he loved to lay out the different battles and whatnot.
Yeah.
But this chapter, for me, when I first started reading the Silmarillion, I got here and I went, I barely have a handle on what the character names are. Barely. And now you're going to throw all this geography at me. Which, by the way, I've always been terrible at geography. My dad used to call me Magellan as a kid as a joke, because I was always so bad at directions. And so I get to this chapter, and I'm like, I don't know if I can get through this. And luckily, I had other podcasts at the time. You know, Prancing Pony was going already, and I had other things to lead me through, visual guides online. And but once you get through it, you read back, and you're like, there's some good details in here. And great, so I'm glad you came in for this, because, again, this is probably... To me, I don't know if you've had the same experience, but when I talk to people about the Silmarillion, this is the infamous chapter.
Absolutely.
Where people say, I don't know what to do with this chapter.
Every person I talk to, they're like, that damn of Beleriand in his realms, I can't. And I'm like, no, like, yes, that's it. Like, I get it.
Right,
and like I said, I tend to find that people have, which, if I'm being honest, the initial couple of chapters in the Silmarillion, I had so much trouble getting through initially. Mm-hmm. And it was about maybe my fifth time. I was like, all right, I got to get through this, man. I got to do this. I love this too much. And then it just clicked. It was something clicked. And then I don't know exactly what made it just click, but I got it. And then from there, it was a cakewalk. And then when I reread it again, I'm like, oh, I see now. It's right. Just the bombardment of names and things like that. And you don't know what's going on. And then once you get it, you're like, okay, I see what's going on. Same thing with Beleriand in his realms, but I actually got that much sooner, and my mind just kind of like compartmentalizes where things are to where the elven houses are or the dwarven kingdoms, and it all comes together. And so, you know, the names are immense, and you know, the names are, there are a lot of different names, but you know, for the most part, you can just take the major names of things, like, and subtly get the understanding. Once you know the main places like Hithlum and Anfalglyph and, you know what I'm saying, Dorthonion and Doriath. And, you know, you get these places, Lothlan, and you get, you know, Osirion and places like that, and where Nargothrond is, and, you know, Mount Taris and West. You kind of know, okay, I know what this is in relation to what group of elves. Okay. And then you can get into the smaller things like learning the rivers that aren't the major two rivers like Sirion and Gellion. You can learn about, you know, Rivascar and, you know, Adarant and, you know, all of those different type of rivers and Nining and all those different type of things. You can get them much more clearly because you've got a grasp on the wider scope of the realm.
Well, I'm really glad you're here for that, because I am not the river expert. I love the character drama. I'll read through this chapter just to do it, but this is certainly not one I would be like, I'd like to read some Tolkien tonight. What should I turn to? A Beleriand and its realms. So we're here, we're in Beleriand. We've just had the third battle.
Yes.
And we're just kind of taking stock of where everything is. This is sort of the calm before the storm, because I was trying to tell my wife today about, you know, I'm going to go talk to the chapter. I can't believe Nubeta picked this chapter because, again, you know, we don't have to rehash that whole thing. But I said every other chapter after this is kind of a banger, right? Like, it's all action from here.
Bangers, exactly.
it doesn't stop. And so we're it's the calm before the storm. We have this description right up front of Atumno, of Thangorodrim, of all this domain of Melkor that, you know, Melkor is besieged now. He can't, his influence is very limited, largely because he's trying to figure out what the hell do I do now that the sun is here.
Yeah.
And it's really cool to see that there are these whole communities that pop up. They're like, it's kind of like when people decide to live on like the edge of the coast, right? Like, sure, this might erode eventually, but we'll live here for now. what's your take on Atumno and this whole region and the surrounding region and Hithlum and whatnot?
So if I was to explain it to someone and I would say, hey, this is how you get an understanding or a grasp where Atumno is in relation to Angband and the rest of Beleriand, so when you go into the chapter, it lets you know in the far north, there was Atumno. Mm-hmm. We know at this time from the readings earlier, Atumno was destroyed. So we don't have to worry about it, but we know it was further in the north. And then we think about this vast wasteland in the north that we don't have to worry about. There's nothing there. And we know as a fence, it tells you, as a fence to the great north where Atumno used to be, he reared the Arid Angren, the Iron Mountains. So we use that as a guiding line across the top, a group of mountains that go across the top, the Iron Mountains. And basically like right in just south of those mountains is Angband. So we know he made Angband previously, and Sauron ruled Angband, and it was a guard against any assault that came from the west by the Valar. It ended up being destroyed along with Atumno, but not wholly destroyed. So when he came back after his his imprisonment in Valinor, and he fled to Middle-earth after stealing the Silmarils and slaying Finwë, he came and rebuilt Angband. There was a remnant mm-hmm. there. The Balrogs had woken up, and then he drew all evil things to him. He began, having orcs come to him and breeding more and more orcs. Sauron came back, all these things. So that is, and he built up the three mountainous peaks of the Thangorodrim out of the ash and the slag of the Iron Mountains. And so he built this, and right there, right where that fence is, mm-hmm. the mountains, he built Angband. So we know at the very top of the world, we're not going past that. We're not going into the far north where those mountains are. And you can look on the map. That is where Angband is going to be. You can't even really see it on the map that they have. They actually cut it off under Angfaoglith, above Angfaoglith. But that's where it is. Right where that cutoff is where the Iron Mountains is. So that's how I would explain. That's where Morgoth's stronghold is. These giant peaks of the Thangorodrim are three mountainous peaks that are also towers that like literally surround Angband and protect it like from any invasion. So you can't get into Angband, and everything behind Angband is protected by the mountains. Mm-hmm. So it tells you that in another chapter, they can't get in Angband. They can't get behind Angband. So they just besiege it. So he can't come out. We know that the elves, when they arise, the next thing we know is that the elves, when they arise, they first they come through the Firth of Drengist, and then they have the Shadowy Mountains, Ered Wethrin, that literally make up where Hithlum is. So it does like a little L. It comes down like a backwards L, and that those mountains, and there's a great land there. It's milder and colder there, but you know, great grasslands and stuff like that. And that is where the Noldor first settle at. Not first settle, but like first have their encampment. Around Lake Mithrim. And so we have Feanor's people who come there first, and then when Fingolfin's force comes over after they cross the Helcaraxa, they come and they settle on the opposite side of the lake. And then eventually, to prevent, more problems, the Seven Sons and their people, Feanor's people, they go to Eastern Beleriand. So we know the stronghold of the elves, the Noldor elves, is going to be in Hiflum. Hiflum is just below the left side of the Iron Angren in the west, and it's fenced by the shadowy mountains that come down like a backwards L. So it's like cut off there, and it goes all the way to the Western Sea. And so it talks about that. So Hiflum, the Noldor elves, the ruling house, Fingolfin and his son Fingon rule over that. Boom. Right there on the westernmost part of the northwest of Middle Earth. Boom. If we were to travel right, directly straight across east, below the Iron Ingram, we have, boom, a giant field, a giant plain. Very simple, very easy to understand. We have the Ard-Galen, which eventually becomes Angfaoglif.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So it's a grassland that is actually right below where Angband is. So it even says that, even back in the day, even though it was desolate and bare, things used to grow there because it was a giant grassy field and plain that covers most of the northern part of that area of Beleriand, which actually technically Beleriand is south, but they call the whole area Beleriand.
Right. There's a line in there where they say, well, a lot of people, they said that's part of Beleriand the same way, regions of the United States, right? You'll be like, oh, that's kind of part of this. That's kind of part of the Midwest, and it's not. But so one question I have for you on a plot point is there's a whole point here where Tolkien writes the war of the powers of the Valar, in their haste to overthrow him from his stronghold of Autumno, did not wholly destroy Angband or search out its deep places. I've been making this case against Manwë. The trial. I'm putting Manwë on trial this whole season of Silmarillion.
I'm with you, brother.
What's going on here? Why aren't they? They have three ages. They put him into prison, and in all that time, nobody said, "Hey, maybe we should go check his, search his lodgings."
He's very short-sighted and naive. Manwë is, and it was a mistake, honestly, to me for Eru to put him in charge. Mm. I think they would have been better off with somebody like Ulmo. Mm. Being in charge, even Orme, not Tolkis, because he doesn't have the mind for those type of things. He's just a kind of a brute,
right?
And just wants to fight. But I think somebody like Orme or Ulmo in particular would have been a better choice. He's concerned. He's like, yo, where's Melkor? We shouldn't let him out. He's a bad guy. So he would have searched the ways. They have to listen to Manwë, their lord. And I think it was an oversight. And they say, oh, we got the big guy. We got Morgoth. Everything else had kind of fall into place. And they overlooked that Morgoth had corrupted these beings, these Fire Maiar, turned them into Balrogs. And they were going to just be waiting for their lord. And Sauron wholly corrupted. They waited and they still did things and they pulled strings while Melkor was away.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a huge oversight. I think Manwë is a terrible king of the Middle Earth, of Arda. I think he's awful. He does not do a lot of good moves, and the other Valar kind of pick up his slack all the time. So I'm right there with you.
Well, welcome to the resistance against Manwë. I appreciate you being here. The other aspect of this is, this whole podcast started as a Rings of Power podcast before we branched out into other stuff, but we have this whole thing where Galadriel is searching in the beginning of Rings of Power, all in the north, because all of this was happening in the north, right? Angband, Autumno, Thangorodrim, all in the north. And she's completely missing that it's possible that evil is stirring in the south. It's really fascinating to see how even these events of the First Age continue to have a hold on the peoples of Middle-earth, particularly the elves, later on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love how they relate the things, together. They're looking in the north and they're always worried about it, and they always kind of miss out on where evil has wiggled or where it's popping up next. And it's Morgoth's ring. So Morgoth's ring is all the things that he put his power into, it says all evil things were left to his charge. They carry on in the world. Morgoth doesn't need to be there. They still persist. So that's the power of Morgoth. People always are talking about, oh, well, Morgoth is so powerful. Why is Tolkien able to beat him? Why is he? That's not his power is placing his power in other things, and they persist until they still persist. So he absolutely is the most powerful. It's just his power is spread out in different ways. So, you know, that's an example of that.
Right. The same way that Sauron was very powerful, but you take away his ring that his power was poured into, now he's weak.
Yeah. He's weaker physically, and you know, he has his sorcery and things like that, but it's his will that's still crazy, and his things and the influences, that's his strength.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So you mentioned Hithlum and the geography of that. There's this whole bit here too. Again, there's these little lore drops within the geography. Like, those horses, many of the sires came from Valinor, and they were given to Fingolfin by Maedhros as atonement. Are you aware of a direct link between these and the leader, you know, Shadowfax, the whole line of horses in Rohan?
Yeah, so I personally think, and, you know, we've talked about this extensively, that these are the Meris that come from Valinor. And, you know, these are horses that are gifted. You know, remember Celegorm and Orome are very close. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the elves at the time that lived in Valinor, they lived amongst the Maiar and the Valar, and they, you know, went with them, and they learned from them, and they were gifted these horses that are like godlike horses, same way Huon is a godlike hound, the same way that, you know, we got Thorndor, who is the birds of heaven, or the eagles, they're not regular, and they're better, and they're special, and so they're gifted these things, just like Huon was gifted to Celegorm. We have these horses being gifted to the elves, and now the elves being like, hey, listen, for our betrayal, this is one of the things I want to make obeisance and give you these horses. And now these horses end up in the hands of Fingolfin and them, and now they're on the plane, and so on and so forth. And when we have the Edain come over, you know, the extension and proxy of them to the Noldor there in the northwest, they end up with some of the horses, and they travel over to Middle Earth, and that's just how these horses get over there and are into possession of some of the people like the descendants of, you know, same house of the people of Hador, just, you know, they haven't wandered over the Blue Mountains. They haven't wandered over the Ereluin. They're related, the Rohirrim, the horse lords, the Eothed.
So right.
It's like mind blowing the connections that Tolkien makes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I really love that everything is seeded so early in Tolkien, right? I mean, this is something that, you know, we do a lot of Star Wars, we do a lot of the House of the Dragon, that kind of stuff on this feed, but Tolkien really was the master, and largely because he was such a solo creator in comparison to those other maybe more collaborative fields. He was so much of a solo creator, he was able to lay these lines early on.
Yeah, and I love he sprinkles the seeds
right.
Throughout the whole story.
But the thing that grieves me the most is I think he really wanted to seed more Galadriel hints.
Absolutely.
Across the first and second age, and it's unfortunate that he died when he did. He couldn't do that.
Yeah, he was trying to, you know, retroactively fill in her lore. And so when, you know, when people are these lore experts are like, Galadriel didn't do this, Galadriel wasn't meant to do that. It's like you haven't read what Tolkien intended for Galadriel to be. He is clear in his writing. This is what I want for her. This is how I wanted her to be. This is what I wanted her to be doing. It's just I didn't get a chance to do that. I had to tell this complete story. I didn't have time to fill out this. Now this is, I'm telling you retroactively, you know, canonically, I wanted her to be as strong as any other elf.
Right.
You know, if a match for any of the other male Noldor, and they called her Man Maiden and all these different things. And she's second only to Feanor in strength. And she is Sauron's chief adversary, which that is something he did get to, you know, get to put in. But You have to make these connections. You can't just go off of, oh, it doesn't say this. Like, it does, but you got to connect the writings. And that's where Christopher does an excellent job, especially in Unfinished Tales. He connected what his father wanted with what was actually written. And he's like, okay, these are the things that my father written down. This is most closely what he wanted to associate with the current writings that you are familiar with. And so you can call it canon if you really want to.
Right. No, that's really cool. And I really love the way that Christopher respected his father's work enough to not, you know, go crazy editing and adding and things like that, right? He really did try to preserve it, but present it in a readable way.
Yes, that is awesome.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll talk about all the other realms of the elves.
Let's do it.
And we're back. So next we have all these other elves settling around, and this is where we really get into the name soup. This is where we're not sure if we're talking about antidepressants or elves. So let's go through it. You've got a whole discussion on Torgon. Then you've got Finrod with Nargothrond. I'm trying to pick out like the major ones, because we could talk about this all day of all the details that are in there. But the whole point of this podcast is to make this digestible, and you can go back later and pick out the little details.
Yeah.
We have mention of Círdan, which is going to be really important in Rings of Power Season 2. Mm-hmm. And then we have Nangunthorthep. Man, I can't pronounce that one. Nangunthorthep. Okay, I'm not even going to try.
Nangunthorthep.
Thank you.
The Valley of Dreadful Death.
Right. I think those are probably, I mean, there's mention of Doriath, but we've already Doriath to death by this point. So I feel like we can mostly give lip service to Doriath. You gave such a good explanation of the North. I'm curious if you have an easy guide to this section, to the realms of Beleriand.
Absolutely. So if we go and we talked about the North, and we talked about Angband, and we talked about Ard Gallan, a.k.a. Aengfaoglith, the gasping dust that is, it turns into Aengfaoglith. So the name is originally Ard Gallan. It's a giant grassland right in the middle of the map, just below Angband and the Iron Mountains. Boom, we have a giant grassland. Think of it as a giant plain. Just below that plain, right smack dab in the middle of the map, we have Dorthonion. Dorthonion is like, it's northern side of Dorthonion is like a giant, like hills that rise up into piney moors. And Dorthonion is like a circular part in the middle that you'll see. And then there's mountains on the bottom side, and there's mountains on the western side. There is a place on the western side near the River Sirion that has a shit ton of mountains. Excuse my language.
Okay. They have a ton of mountains. That's okay. Listen, we're rated explicit. You do whatever you want.
And they have mountains that go and encircle, and they encircle a valley. And that is where we'll get into, but that is where Gondolin is. So if we move a little bit east, we have Dorthonion, which is like kind of like a highland. And it is just not the greatest terrain. It has pine forests and all kinds of like different type of terrain that's tough to get by, but it's a place that's right in the middle of the map. And then on its southern border, we have the mountains of the arid Gorgoroth, the mountains of terror. Mm-hmm. And so these mountains drop off into dreadful precipices is what they say. And then it goes down, and below those mountains, that's where we leave Dorthonion, and we come into a great valley. Now in this valley, the valley is called Dangorthep, and that valley is just cut off from everything, but there's a small pass through it. Now, if we go below that valley, we run smack dab into Doriath. The northernmost part of Doriath is a forest, a minor forest called Neldoreth. So just think about this. Between Doriath and between the Mountains of Terror is a valley, and it's shadowy, and it's dark, and spiders live there, and monsters, and it is a terrible place, just because it has those evil mountains on its northern border. It has the southern border of the valley is literally the Girdle of Melian protects Doriath from everywhere, so it's cut off. Right. You can't go in there, and it's just like, just you're trapped in this terrible place that's dark and gloomy, and all these shadow monsters and spiders and things are there. And that's why it's called the Valley of Dreadful Death. Ungoliant settled there and bred with spiders that lived there. And this is where we get creatures like Shelob. Shelob is the last surviving daughter of Ungoliant, and she was actually born in Nangunthorthep, the Valley of Dreadful Death. So there's a passageway to get from Eastern Beleriand to Western Beleriand and vice versa. And you can go through there pretty quickly. It's just so dangerous. Mm-hmm. Only like the most hardy elves do it. And they stay near the fence of Doriath. By doing it, there's a road that they travel, but it's very dangerous. Anybody else, they don't kind of really go through there.
Right.
And especially north to south, because you're like going through the thick of it, the danger. These are examples of people that have traveled through there successfully. you know, traveling from east to west, going to the Forest of Brethil. We have group of the Edain, the people of Lady Haleth, the Haladin. They travel with Haleth through there at great loss, and they travel through there. And they stay near the fence of Doriath, and they're okay, and they don't experience what our next person that goes through there experiences, but it was hell. Baron travels from north to south. So he goes from through the Mountains of Terror down through the Valley of Dreadful Death to Doriath. And it is said that his journey was so terrible, he will never speak of it again. And it bent him and made him gray, and like he was like traumatized. It's as terrible was his southward journey. And it's one of the things that resonates with me, how Tolkien doesn't explain, but by that, it explains. He's like, he's so traumatized, he won't even talk about it. So just imagine that valley. And the most prolific and dopest thing about Nandungorthev is it's at a time Sauron takes over Dorthonion and it becomes Tar Nufuin. And the power of Sauron and the sorcery of Sauron and the power of Melian meet in Nandungorthev, and monsters and shadows monsters and horror walk there. And madness walk there. It's awesome description. And it's like you could just see the two opposing forces like just meeting right there, and it's just horrible. Like it's absolutely dope. So that part right there, easy peasy lemon squeezy. It's just Dorthonion is just a high pine foresty place. It even tells you if Morgoth was to attack, most likely they don't think he would attack and take that over as much as he would other places, because the terrain is not easy to get by. It's not easy terrain to track and go through. And we, like I said, it's precipices and it goes into a valley. It's not an easy thing. That's why there's passes on either side of Dorthonion. There is called the Western Pass, which is on the western side of the map. And that is where the River Sirion flows from. Okay. It flows all the way in between the Ered Wethryn, those mountains in between where Dorthonion is, and its pass, it goes all the way down into southern Beleriand. And then on the eastern side, we have the Eastern Pass, which we'll get into, which goes below Himring and down to the eastern side of Beleriand.
Nice. So you've got all these, you've got this horrible path, you've got decent paths, not so bad. And then you've got these other realms run by Turgon and Finrod, which both of them, of course, got these visions, said, hey, buddies, you got to go find your own realms. And here we are. Here we're actually talking about the realms. And, we get more detail in the next chapter. I recorded these two podcasts out of order because of scheduling. So I've already recorded the podcast on the next chapter. But I like that we get a little bit of a tease of it right here. So I want to get your take on these two realms, too.
Gondolin is my favorite place in the entire Legendarium. I absolutely love it. It is modeled after Tirion, the elven city in Valinor. And it was in that place, just to the left of Dorthonion, where those encircling mountains are. And Tum Laden is the name of the grassy plain where we have Gondolin sit. And, Turgon the Wise, he found it. At first, his residence was in Vinyamar, which was on the westernmost coast of Middle-earth, just below Hiflum. And a place is Nevrast is the entire place. And there's a group of mountains that encircle that place. It's like a triangle group of mountains that circle that place.
Yeah, and I love in the next chapter, you get the description of him building Gondolin. And he's just like, everybody really quietly come over here, bring all the building supplies. Like nobody tell anybody else. Just sneak over all the lumber and everything. It's very fun.
Just beyond the River Sirion, there's a secret way that he found with the help of Olmo, and it goes under the mountains and up into Tum Laden, and he builds Gondolin, city of seven names, seven gates, and it takes years. I think like 50 something years to build it. And he slowly, brings his people and they migrate over there silently and secretly. And then he shuts himself in Gondolin and nobody can leave upon threat of death and nobody can enter. And
Turgon has tighter information security than the CIA. Nobody's going to get in.
Second son of Fingolfin. His presence always bothered Morgoth. Morgoth always looked at him like, from Doom, someday something's going to come from your house. I don't like you. I'm kind of scared of you. And then we have the most beloved of all the elves, Finrod Felagund. If you're not familiar with Finrod, I know you are, but Finrod is Galadriel's eldest brother. He is the son of Finarfin. He is magnificent. He is great. This house of Finarfin all have blonde hair. He is very powerful. He's very wise. He's very kind. And he's beloved by all the races. He's one of the only elves that is loved by dwarves, men, elves. Right. He's loved by everyone. And he gets that same dream. Him and Turgon were actually together sleeping by a river. And Olmo comes up and puts visions in their mind. Hey, you got to look for a place of hidden strength. And so unlike Turgon, who kind of keeps it to himself and goes and finds it himself, he has a great uncle named Thingol, who is the ruler of Doriath. So he is allowed to enter Doriath because he is of that household.
They gotta leave in the previous chapters. They're like, all right, leave. I'm really mad. Get out of my house and then come back later.
Yeah, he could come back. It's cool, but I'm mad at you right now. His grandfather and Thingol are brothers, and so he has leave to go there to visit his uncle. And he asks his uncle, like, well, you're the lord of Beleriand, because Thingol rules over Beleriand. And the other elves actually kind of have to get permission to live in Beleriand or in his realm. And so he's like, hey, I had this vision. I'm looking for a place to hit a string. Do you know anywhere? And Thingol was like, yo, there's these caves that are, you know, just beyond the river Narog, like, a little west from here, beyond Brethel, a little bit south, you'll be able to see what's up with that.
And he says, boom. Nephew, I've got some primo real estate for you.
Primo real estate was previously the petty dwarves had dealt it out, and Finrod goes, and with the help of the elves of Belagost and Nargrod, he delves out Nargothrond. And because he built this in these caves and caverns, they call him Felagund, hewer of caves. And he keeps that name ever after. And he is beloved. And, he pays the dwarves very richly for their services with gems that he brought over from Valinor. And they love him, and they build him a great necklace known as the Nauglamir. It's the greatest work of the dwarves in the history of the dwarves, the Nauglamir. And they give him the name Felagund, and he's renowned. And so he has his place of hidden strength. It's between the sea and between Doriath, basically the whole realm of Nargothrond. But Nargothrond itself is a hidden city beyond the River Narok in these caverns, and there's no bridge, which is super important, which we know what happens later, so you can't get there. You can't find it. It's very hidden. And there's a plane, past Narog that is guarded. It's a guarded plane that the elves like secretly hide in its towers that you don't see. And if you walk through there without permission, you get shot with arrows. And it's very well protected. No great.
That HOA is really vigilant.
Yeah, it's very vigilant there. So it is said that actually Finrod, even though he is the youngest of the princes of the elves, has the largest land area.
Right, right.
So, yeah, so he has the largest kingdom by far, it's said. But he kind of doesn't even use it because, Nargothrond, the kingdom itself, the actual tower and thing, it's hidden in those caverns. But his land area that he owns is huge.
Yeah. He's just all around good guy, right?
He's the best.
Everybody's loving him. There's a detail earlier in the chapter. He's got his own Minas Tirith. He's got his own watchtower.
Yes.
Along the river. So that's
exactly in the Western Pass. He builds the tower to watch the Western Pass, because that would be the easiest way to come into Beleriand. If you were the enemy, you would just come down from Angband and go down Angfauglif and go down the Western Pass right at the Fen of Sarek, and you go down where Sirion is, and literally you go right down the Western Pass, follow the river, and you go right into Beleriand. So in a place where there is a lake there, he builds absolutely a massive, beautiful tower, and it protects the Western Pass, and we know what happens to it. But the tower is named Minas Tirith, the original Minas Tirith Tower of Guard.
Very nice. Very nice. You know, Finrod, as you mentioned, is the youngest and the one with the most land. And we know that the Noldor are proud people, let's say.
Yeah, absolutely.
They are very into rank. They are very into hierarchy. They are very into seniority. I would say let's not go too deep into it now, but perhaps keep an eye on that with the politics of Nargothrond.
Yes, yes, yes. Absolutely. Yes, there's some secret politics that's going on. And with that, you know, that's a good way to segue into Eastern Beleriand, because the eldest house of the Noldorian elves lives in Eastern Beleriand. Those would be the Feanorians, the seven sons of Feanor. Mm-hmm. And if we move to the eastern side, on the eastern side of Dorthonion, if we like are northeast, there is a place that is just kind of bare and open. It's called Lothlan. There's nothing there to protect anything. And it's the easiest way technically to get into Beleriand altogether, because there's no restraints there. But they settle there, and they're most open to the idea that, hey, if we get attacked, we'll defend Middle-earth. You know what I'm saying? We'll defend Beleriand.
Right.
And so the Seven Sons settle there from north to south. And in their past Lothlan, just south, next to Dorthonion, there is a group of low-lying hills with one great hill known as Himring. And this is called the March of Mithros. Mithros is the eldest son of Feanor, and he is a monster with his sword. He's one-handed, but he fights with the white-hot fire within him, and he is no joke. He is the eldest son.
He was the heir, right?
Was the heir, would have been the king. He gives up his kingship, which technically Fingolfin always should have been the king. It goes to the eldest living male of the house of Finwë. So he tells him that when he gives up the kingship, because Feanor kind of just yapped the kingship. He wasn't supposed to take it. But he guards there. Just below Himring, there is a pass that goes from Himring down into southern Beleriand, and that is guarded by his two brothers. The Pass of Aglaon is guarded by his two brothers, Celegorm and Hurfin. And Maglor guards Maglor's Gap. That's on the other side. It's another way into southern Beleriand.
Yep.
And so we know they live there. And there's a place called Himlad. That's where actually Curufin and Celegorm guard, and the Pass of Aglaon is near there. And if we go lower than that, if we go to the right of that, actually, if we go to just the right of that, we'll see we're about to run into the Blue Mountains. We're about to run into the Blue Mountains, and that is the border of where Beleriand turns into the Middle Earth proper. So there is a great lake there, Lake Helavorn, and this is where Carinthir has his land. Just below Lake Helavorn is a giant, massive piece of land who is owned. It's called Thargelion. And this is where Carinthir rules. And he is so close to the mountains, he controls all the traffic that comes from those mountains. And he has the largest landmass out of the Seven Sons. And all of Thargelion is known as, you know, the land of Carinthir. And he guards that. Now, Amrod and Amros, the youngest brothers, the twins, the last two, they live just south of that, near the Esthelad and below that. And they just live in the woods, and they're like hunters, and they kind of like don't, their land is not significant, just above Osirian in that land there. They kind of just kind of roam, live there. So it's that is their land. Eastern Beleriand belongs to the Seven Sons of Feanor, and they're strong and they protect it from Morgoth's forces.
Yeah, the Sons of Feanor are nothing if not militaristic.
Right? Militaristic, yes. They keep great cavalry by Himring and the gap of Maglor and Maglor's Gap, and they keep a good watch on Angband. So
now I know our time is short. Now you've gone to the end of the chapter. I just want to go right back quick to the Green Elves. Can we talk quick about them?
Yo, the Green Elves are awesome. This is these are like elves that you kind of think about more properly. I feel like these are like the elves that you're kind of used to seeing, like, oh, they're wearing green and they're nature elves and everything like that. So they are what's known as the Nandor. These are the same type of elves. These are Teleri elves that Teleri is the overhead arching thing of the Sindar elves. The Sindar elves are in Doriath, and they're the elves of Beleriand. They're an offshoot of the Teleri elves. And the same group of elves did not cross the mountains and come into Beleriand. They did not cross the Ered Luin. They stayed. They actually didn't even cross the Misty Mountains. They stayed on that side. Mm-hmm. But one remnant of them decided later, hey, let's break off and go into Beleriand and go in there. And these elves settle in when they cross the Ered Luin, the Blue Mountains. They go into Beleriand and they settle in Osirian, and they are welcomed by Thingol as, you know, kin, because they are the same type of elves, but culturally they have devolved and begun to be different. And
They're late stage Eldar, right? They're not Avari at the very last second.
They're not Avari. They're Nandor. They are very similar to, I would say, the elves of Mirkwood or the elves of Lothlorien.
Right.
This is just a contingent of them that came over later than the Sindar elves. Now, what's the differences between them and the Sindar are, they are much more naturistic and they are know more about birds and beasts and trees and things like that than the Sindar. The Sindar are kind of more because of the power of Melian and Thingol, and they build and live in caves and things like that, where these are elves are like nature, live in the trees, live in the grasslands, and they live over there. And Osirian is the land of seven rivers, because the largest river in Beleriand is known as Gellion, and that is on the eastern side of Beleriand. The second largest river, but the most important river, is the River Sirion, and that is runs on the western side. So Gellion has six tributaries that go off of its side. Now, all the names escape me, but we have Askar, Adarant, and there's some other ones I can't remember off the top of my head, but they make up the tributaries that run directly into the Ered Luin, and they actually come down from the Ered Luin and fill Gellion and keep it full and wide. Now, that is where Osirian is, and it is awesome. There is an island between two of these rivers, between the river Adarant, where there's a break in the rivers, and there's an island in the middle known as Tol Galen, and that is the Green Isle. And that's actually where Beren and Luthien end up living. And so they live amongst the elves of Osirian.
Nice. And that's where Beren never speaks a word to mortal man again.
Never again. That's actually where they pass, and no mortal man or anybody knows whatever became of them.
Except the writer of this book.
Except the writer of the book. So
that's a question, right? Because this is supposed to be an internal text. So how did we know?
You know, we just gotta trust that these stories are being told by the proper authorities, and you know what I'm saying.
It's so, all Noldor propaganda.
Exactly. That's what I always hear. It's Noldor propaganda. But I don't believe that, only because they actually give the dwarves so much props. Mm-hmm. Beside the you know, the war, they give the dwarves much props with certain things. And, you know, being that I'm talking about the dwarves, I'd probably say, like, one of the last things that we'd say is, in the Blue Mountains, like, kind of directly in the middle of the Blue Mountains, maybe a little south, we have the two dwarven kingdoms or the dwarven mansions of Belagos, which is further north. Mm-hmm. And then we have the kingdom or the mansion of Nargrod. These are two great dwarven mansions. They are masters at mining, crafting, especially Nargrod. They're unmatched in their crafting abilities. Telkar, who made Narsil, the sword that cut the ring from Sauron's hand. He also made Angriss, the knife that cut the Silmaril from the crown of Morgoth. He made the dragon helm of Dor Lomond. I'm sure he had a hand in making the Nauglamir. Telkar is the greatest dwarven smith, third greatest smith in the histories of Beleriand and Middle Earth, behind Feanor and Celebrimbor. So they have a monster of a smith, a crafter of a person, of a being. His works are renowned, and they're great dwarven kingdoms right there. And they have a mountain that they use to come down off the dwarf road, It's called Mount Dolmed. So that is where the road that leads from their two kingdoms meets and comes down. And that's how they traffic into Beleriand from Mount Dolmed, and they travel. And they actually worked with the elves in Doriath, and they had great profit from, you know, trading with them and doing works for them. They, like I said, they actually built Minagroth, the Thousand Caves, and they built Nargothrond, and Melian, you know, gave them great knowledge and helped them. And also, there is a little forest, Nan Elmoth, right on the outside skirts, on the western edge of Doriath, that a dark elf lives in, and he's close kin to Thingol. His name is Eol.
Yep.
Well, Eol is a dark elf that does not like anybody else, but he loves the dwarves, and the dwarf road passes right by his crib. So they talk, and they became great friends, and this is where the earliest known, like, true friendship between elves and dwarves came from. And in that forest of Nan Elmoth, which has the tallest trees in all of Beleriand, that's where Melian and Thingol fell in love. And now Eol dwells there. And that's where Maeglin was born. And, that's where he ensnared Arathel, Turgon's sister, when she left Gondolin. And he learns much crafts from the dwarves of Belagost and Nargrod. And so does his son Maeglin. And this is where we get great swords. The sword Gorthang ends up being created by Eol, who learned his craft from the dwarves. So it's all the geography ties in with the story, and it's awesome.
Well, new better, do better. I really appreciate you coming here, because I could not have explained that half as well. I am not the geography guy, and so I'm so glad that you volunteered for this chapter that I was terrified of covering.
Man, it's so awesome. I'm sorry we couldn't have more time, man.
Oh, that's all right.
Keep going.
That's all right. Listen, you're always welcome back. We got plenty more chapters to go. I think I've got more Tolkien plans after we finish the Silmarillion, too. So I'm sure we'll have another opportunity for you to come back.
I'd be honored, man. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you, man. I love what you're doing, man. Keep doing what you're doing. And I'm so appreciative and humbled that you would have me on your show.
Oh, I'm super appreciative that you've come. Can you tell people, though, before you go, where to find you?
Guys, my main thing to find me on is just look me up on TikTok. As soon as you type in Newbetta, 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 do better. You know what I'm saying? You'll see me pop up, and, you know, please, you know, give me some follow, some likes, shares, you know, comment on stuff. If you know, if you agree, you disagree. I always love the engagement. I also am on Twitter, same thing. Also on Instagram, same thing as well. And I'm working on a YouTube. I got YouTube, but it's like, I'm scared to, like, you know, put content on it because the two hacks that I got.
I hear you. Well, thanks so much. I love your videos. I hope you keep making them. I hope people go check them out. And we will drop those links in the show notes.
Thank you so much.
I had a great time talking to Newbetta Dubetta about the geography of Middle Earth. And I hope everyone will go check out Newbetta's socials. I have linked in the show notes here. For now, I want to talk about what's coming next on the Lorehounds Network. This week, we are on episode 7 of House of the Dragon. We're having a great time with that show. Of course, don't forget, you can get the show guide if you are a subscriber. You could also get it if you are a season pass holder. You can find all those links in the show notes. We are also wrapping up The Acolyte this week. Alicia has wrapped up the edit, I believe, for The Acolyte season 1 wrap-up, where Alicia, Jean, Marilyn, and I had a game show type format where we tried to match our answers to David, who was in England while we were recording. We also have a review of Deadpool versus Wolverine, or Deadpool and Wolverine, choice is yours, where Jean, Alicia, and I give our hot takes, and then Alicia and Jean went on to talk about comics, about the San Diego Comic-Con news, and more. And you can hear more about what happened at San Diego Comic-Con by listening to the main feed and this Tolkien feed, where you can find the breakdown of the Rings of Power trailer 2. I guess it's the first main trailer with Marilyn Arpaquila, David, and I. We are all going to be talking about it. It might not be out before this episode drops, but it will be out this week. On the other feeds, Alicia is going to be doing a Silo Season 2 San Diego Comic-Con announcement, air date, casting news, and more podcast on the Wool Shift Dust feed. She's also going to be doing something for her book club, a Third Shift book breakdown. So I believe that's her Patreon exclusive deal on her Patreon. But yeah, so she has plenty coming. Next week, we have more Canon Myths of the Old Republic on the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast feed. And lastly, Rings and Rituals, Marilyn Arbuckila and Sarah Brown's podcast on the rituals surrounding the Rings of Power Season 1 is starting its rerun right now. So if you missed it the first time around, get prepped for Rings of Power Season 2. Please go and listen. It is a great podcast. You can find all of these links in the link tree in the show notes. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Lastly, I just have to do our thank yous. Our Discord server boosters, Gnarls, Aaron K, Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, Doove71, Captain Gingy56, Athena Agilea, and our lore masters on Supercast and Patreon, Samartian, Michael G, Michelle E, David W, Brian P, SC, Peter OH, Bettina W, Adam S, Nancy M, Doove71, Brian8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Eric F, Matthew M, Sarah M, DJ Miwa, Andra B, Kwang Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T, Alex V, Aaron T, Sub-Zero, Aaron K, Dally V, Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W, Stuart B, Jeffrey B, Elisa U, and Adrian. Thanks everyone for listening. Next month, I have Aaron from Lore of the Rings ready to go with the next chapter. So check that out. It's already recorded, so it will be out, I believe, the week of August 12th. Keep an eye on the feed for that. We will see you next month. The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.